Seeking mental health care can be overwhelming and even scary, but it doesn't have to be. I'm Dr. Josephine McNary, and I'm committed to making this process easier for you. Each week, my expert guest and I unravel a different form of therapeutic intervention in order to bring comfort and understanding and to help you get back to your true self. This is Dr. Josephine McNary. Welcome to Mind Stories. Today, I have the pleasure to talk with Elena Gonzalez. Elena is a licensed psychotherapist with 20 years' experience working with children, families, and adults. She weaves Eastern and Western philosophies into her practice. Her areas of expertise include infants and mothers, parenting, children, adolescents, families, women's issues, divorce issues, co-parenting, trauma, and anxiety. Welcome to the next episode of Mind Stories. I'm sitting here in the beautiful office space of Elena Gonzalez, who is a holistic psychotherapist. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So, I mean, maybe we can talk a little bit about what holistic psychotherapy is, and then maybe talk a little bit about, I know you have a specialty and you know, your basis of your initial training was in infant mental health. And I think that's something listeners might be really interested in hearing about. So should we talk maybe first about what it means to be a holistic psychotherapist?
Sure. So I think holistic for me, I'm sure it means different things for different people, is just the way that I conceptualize a client when they come in. So I don't just think about their mind or their suffering or whatever symptoms they're walking in through the door. I really look at the whole person. I look at what's going on physically, diet-wise, mentally, sleep. I mean, the whole gamut. I really take into account everything that's going on because that is really going to inform where I begin, right? So I think, and I think we're moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. I think everyone is finally getting that you really have to look at the whole person and not just what they're saying to you. What's that saying? The body tells a story that the mouth never will,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So really paying attention to that. So, and I practice yoga and Tai Chi, and I really use that with my clients.
How do you do that in the room with a client?
Well, because I also conceptualize somatically from a somatic perspective, and then I'll go back to your infant mental health question.
Yeah.
A lot of times, just having them do some movement and not talking.
So when you think of traditional therapy, you think of, you know, the therapist is sitting and then they're across from you, the client's across from you on a couch. But the client, when they come to see you, there's a lot of movement that happens.
Sometimes, I'll, like when you came in, I put the weighted blanket on you.
Yeah.
Sometimes just to ground them, right? Sometimes I don't have them even say anything, just sitting and getting in their body. Because how many times, right, someone walks into your office and they're like,
yeah.
The energy's so crazy.
Right. So it's not just about talking back and forth. It's about kind of the feeling in the room and helping someone feel grounded, whatever that might be.
It's really working with the nervous system is what we're talking about, right? And I can come back to that. But I think one of the things that really sort of got me more into somatic work and trauma work was after I worked in infant mental health, because that really helped me realize and understand how regulation began back then.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, I think this idea of when people hear about infant mental health, they think it's an infant. What I mean, you just take care of their basic needs. So can you explain to the listener what that is?
So when I worked in infant mental health, we always worked with the dyad being the mom and the baby, right? Because the baby cannot exist alone. It's a co-regulatory system with the mom. I'm saying the mom for,
you know, the primary caregiver.
As the primary caregiver. But we know that they are a co-regulatory system. And if the baby is upset, mommy soothes and helps the baby calm down, you know, until later on when they can, in toddler years, hopefully begin to self-regulate. But we also know that if the mom, and typically these were the families that we were working on, the mom, because of her own trauma or history or a difficult birth, wasn't able to self-regulate herself enough to help co-regulate the dyad. Mm-hmm. So we would come in and we would videotape and we would, you know, play back to the mom, you know, while they were together, have her watch herself after she had been with the baby, you know, and it was so enlightening for them because here they thought they were going through the motions, but sometimes they would see how flat they were or how many cues they missed from the baby. You know, we talked a lot about circles of communication, you know, when the baby goo-goos and the mama's goo-goo back, you know, and then the baby goo-goo. Those are all circles of communication, and we would have them notice how many cues did they miss from the baby. So it was really, really helpful, you know, and then we would work with the mommy and the baby to get them more in tune and in sync. I mean, it was amazing.
Huh. So it's kind of, it's a training a primary caregiver to be more in tune or to just, it's with a self, it trains yeah. them.
To, with self, to train their, to be aware of, right, holistically, mm-hmm. here we go, to train themselves to be aware of their nervous system, mm-hmm. to not be overwhelmed by it, and to then be available to their baby. Hmm. Who needs their own soothing and calming down because they're a baby.
Yeah.
Because they're not online yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, you worked with these dyad pairs, right? And were there some moms that just had a hard time getting it?
The moms who had a lot of complex trauma, right? Mm-hmm. It was really, because they didn't get, their nervous system didn't get the regulatory skills that they needed. Right. Mm-hmm. So we were going back and retraining a nervous system. And did they improve to where we would want them to? I don't know. But did they improve? Yes.
And how do you retrain a nervous system as a...
Well, I think it's just that learning to be aware of when your body talks to you. That's sort of how I think of it. Right. Mm-hmm. It's when the simple form is, how do we learn to tolerate having a big feeling in our body? How do we tolerate being uncomfortable without having to put it away or without having to go jog 10 miles, mm-hmm. you know? So it's learning to manage, learning to self-soothe, learning to self-regulate. That's what it is, right?
So it's first recognizing the feeling, mm-hmm. and where that sits in your body.
Yes. And I always tell clients, we're saying, hey, if you're uncomfortable, I'm happy, right?
You're right.
Because that means they're learning a new skill, a new skill set. We're rewiring.
Got it. So thinking about the mom with the baby, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So what happens? So if she's in the room with the baby and she's not responding to the cue and you play back that tape to the mom, is there a feeling that you're kind of teaching her, or there's the avoidance of interacting with the baby? That's the feeling that you're trying to get?
Well, for her, and I don't know, for her, it's so individual and what that may or may not trigger as she watches the video with us, mm-hmm. you know, but sometimes it was just like the sadness of that they thought they were responding and that they weren't, you mm-hmm. know, and then sort of helping them unpack why, you know, but just sometimes just that watching. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even have to, we didn't have to watch that much. You know, they would get it. It's like, right. Oh my God, I'm not responding to my baby.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, teaching them that through no fault of their own. And I think going back and having them understand maybe why, if we want to say, I don't like to say avoidant, but sort of if they're flat or not as engaged or not as available, you know, what is getting in their way? You know, how can they be more aware of what their triggers are or when they're overwhelmed? Again, going back to the body, mm-hmm. right? What do they need to do to be in a space when they're with their baby? Because we know that nervous systems wire to each other, right?
Right.
We know if the mom is really revved up, we know that the baby's going to be really revved up. So really teaching them. So a lot of psychoeducation, a lot of going back and having them sort of unpack stuff if they needed to. You know, mm-hmm. so that they can be more present and available.
Right. And I was just thinking kind of this idea of what infant, a good infant or good infant mental health is. It's feeling that your caregiver understands your emotional needs and is in tune with what you need, yeah, right?
And that they're responding to that.
And you, so as an infant, you have a caregiver who is able to kind of, you, as an infant, that there's a sense that you are kind of, your caregiver is understanding what your needs are,
yes,
simply. Is that kind of the, yeah, simplest idea of infant,
yes,
mental
that
health?
That you're seen and tended to, right? And isn't that what we all want?
Right, but not just with your needs of food and shelter. It's emotionally.
It's emotional. It's the, oh, baby, right? We know, mm-hmm, how much a baby comes out. Oh, come here, baby. Mm-hmm. You know, and the bouncing and da-da-da-da. And it's, yes, it's that constancy and consistency that helps a baby then later become a toddler or a late-stage child, adolescent, be able to be okay in their all their different feeling states, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why I was saying after I did infant mental health, it's so informed how I now work with clients, because oftentimes I will go back and ask them about their childhood, or if their parents are still alive, to go back and ask what kind of baby they were or what the interactions were. And it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. We learn so much about,
right,
you know, which people don't think. And just in terms of the co-regulation, or who was the primary caregiver. So a lot of times clients sometimes don't know that, oh, my mom worked all the time, so I was with the babysitter, you know, from early morning till, right, mom came home to, yeah, late at night, you know, whatever. So,
yeah, and the hope is that that babysitter kind of was able to tend to, hopefully, the child's emotional needs.
Yeah, but it is really, it really helps, I think, when I explain self-regulation and co-regulation, right? Because if you think about it, in any relationship that we're going to be later, either, I'm trying to think, with our partners or in works, we have to have the capacity to self-regulate ourselves.
Right.
If we don't, we're in big trouble. And then we can't help anyone else co-regulate.
Right. And that begins in infancy. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Huh. Yeah. So what... I mean, I think you already talked about this, but so a healthy attachment to a caregiver in infancy allows you then to go out in the world and repeat through your life these healthy interactions with people who are, you know, emotionally important to you, mm-hmm, right? So maybe we've kind of already talked about this, but maybe if we could kind of discuss it again, what happens if an infant doesn't have that? What do you see?
Well, then you see all the struggle with connecting and attachment, right? I mean, if you want to get into the insecure, the avoidant attachment, the disorganized attachment, you know, which we then see as adults, and they come in, mm-hmm, you know, right? You see them, I
right,
see them.
So maybe talking a little bit about, so we talk about kind of the insecure infant, mm-hmm, and insecure attachment, and how that might look later on in life as an adult.
Right. So if I think of a client who came in and was talking about his, let's say, girlfriend, and was saying, oh, it's so hard. She constantly has to text me or email me, or if I'm out or if we're apart, she just can't be okay, you know. So to me, I'm already like,
So the partner is, right, maybe insecure because that partner doesn't feel secure in that relationship, right, and is constantly seeking ways to soothe themselves, it sounds,
yes,
like.
But okay, whose is it, right? Is it his or is it hers or is it the combination?
Right.
So we don't know if it's her struggle with whatever she was or if this is sort of a familiar pattern to him. Hmm. And he's comfortable in that context and in that dyad.
Right.
You know, we don't know. But I think insecure is sort of that struggle to be in yourself, mm-hmm, to be okay on your own or with who you are, or even if you're away from your loved ones. Right.
Right.
And someone who struggles with that is not, and is always feeling a little bit rubbed up.
Right.
Right. And a little bit uncomfortable.
Huh. But so I'm thinking about the male in that relationship, right? The fact that someone needs him, mm-hmm, might be uncomfortable.
Or not.
Or maybe not.
Yeah, or he likes,
right,
that, right?
Maybe. Well, he's saying that it's a problem, but maybe not. Got it. But it's something about Yeah, this idea of that, how as an adult you feel comfortable with your partner's needs and feel like you can actually address those appropriately and tend to those, right?
Yeah, well, first we have to be, it's like we taught that mom, you know, back, and we first have to always be able to handle our own feeling states and self-regulation, period. Right. So if that partner, let's say that girlfriend, isn't able to handle her own feeling states, she's going to have a hard time being in any dyad, right? Because there's never going to be any, it's never going to be a reciprocal process because someone's always going to have to be tending to her, which will be exhausting.
Right.
So, and that's not a healthy dynamic in the long run.
It's like probably a history of alienating partners and then not being able to kind of stick with longer term relationships, even though she wants them. So maybe, I mean, I feel like I have so many questions about this because it's so interesting. And I think listeners might find this just fascinating, right? But, you know, I don't know. I think about if I was a mom and I, you know, had a hard time emotionally connecting to my child, even though I wanted to, it's such it's a hard, so hard, you know, moms, well, they mean so well. And it's sometimes it's just, it's about kind of your history of attachment and so many things go into parenting. Right. But what, I mean, are there specific exercises or skills you teach people? Or I know it's specific to the client.
It's so specific. Well, you know, that's sort of where all the somatic and trauma work comes in. It's really helping people, you know, understand a little bit of how our brain works.
So talking more about this idea of like, what are the exact skills that you would maybe address with somebody? What would that be?
Right. So helping the client, the mom, the dad, the adult, whoever comes in, is really understand their nervous system, right? And are they someone who gets revved up really high? Or are they someone who gets bumped down really low and tends to get depressed and withdrawn and retreat? You know, revved up is irritable, angry, rage, you know, all the things that you think of with revved up, you know, and really, and what happens, I think, with someone who doesn't understand their feeling states, they tend to get overwhelmed by them very easily, right? Mm-hmm. So doing some training about the brain, that we go into our fight, fight, or freeze, and sometimes it feels like a feeling can be like a lion coming into the room and you want to run, you want to fight, or you want to flee, you know. So helping them understand that that is a part of their brain that keeps getting triggered and triggered and triggered, and that we want to get them to the prefrontal cortex, the front of the brain, which is your more rational brain, right? Which we know that then we can be aware and we can be in our social engagement system where we can make good decisions from. But if you're constantly living in your fight, flight, or freeze, it's going to be hard for you to manage in the world, right? So I do a quick little lesson with them, just sort of like I did with you. You know, I have a little chart and everything that I can show them. But, you know, so how do we help them stay in their resilient zone? How do we consistently have them not get bumped too high or not too low, right? And this is the language that we use.
Right, but still allow those feelings to be part of them, though,
yes,
right?
Exactly. So when they notice a feeling, can they not just go to their head, right? Because mm-hmm. you have clients who come in, oh my God, I can't stop thinking about her. I'm so upset. I'm sad and sad. It's like, okay, so let's slow that down. Let's have you notice that in your body. Where do you notice that? Mm-hmm. What does that feel like? What are the, you know, and I take them through all the senses because we know that through fight, flight, or freeze, it comes in through the five senses. So is there a temperature attached to that? Does it feel like a certain shape? Does it feel like a color? Where do you notice it? Is it tight? Is it loose? Right? So we're giving them a whole different language, right?
Right.
So people say, oh, I feel like a knot in my stomach. Okay. Like, can we just notice the knot? Can we just notice the knot in your stomach? Can you just slow that down? Can you still notice your body on the couch and that you're noticing the knot and that you're still okay? Right? And then, I mean, there's a whole lot more that goes with that. Then we teach them to tolerate the knot and that the knot goes away. And then they really notice, wow, I feel better. I'm okay.
Right.
Right. And they, what I say to them is, wow, you just had a big feeling and nothing horrible happened.
Yeah, right. That you could do that.
That you could do that, right? And that's the retraining, because before they would feel the knot and the freak out would come, right? Mm-hmm. They would either put it away or they would get really, really, really anxious and revved up in their body and would probably be very difficult to be around, right? We've all been around that person who's so revved up, it's really hard to be around them.
Right. And I was thinking about how that maybe relates to infancy. If an infant that is worked up, and maybe instead of a mother who ignores it, a mother who gets even more activated from that, the baby being agitated, and that's not helpful to the infant because they're not processing their emotional needs in a way that's really
and
helpful.
No one's holding it for them, right?
Right.
No one is holding that for them. It's okay for you to be uncomfortable and to be fussy, but I'm just going to hold you. I'm going to walk you around. I'm going to sing to you, right? Then if I come at that baby like, oh, and my heart is pounding and racing and I can have a hard time holding the baby, right? The baby is reading my nervous system. And now we have two people, a baby and a mommy, who are completely revved up.
Mm-hmm. Right. And nothing.
No one's getting soothed.
No one's getting soothed. You know what I'm thinking of? This metaphor of a baker kneading dough.
Yes.
I don't know, it's kind of a weird metaphor, but it's kind of, you know, you have like this emotion, and what a mom does, you know, what you would hope that a mom does to attend to the needs is kind of you knead the dough and you just kind of work through it a little bit.
Did you see? I took it, my nervous system just landed as you did that.
Yeah.
Because I was like, it was such a nice gesture.
Right,
that my nervous system was like, oh, that's very soothing. But yes, that's exactly what you want the baby to feel. And you want the mom to approach the baby with like, oh, come here, you're upset, you're whatever it was, you know.
Right.
And not like, oh,
what do I do? Yeah, well, I mean, all moms have that moment.
God, we've all been there.
Right.
Yes,
but
but
it's kind of a, you know.
It's a different, right? It's like, ah, come here, but I got you. You know what I mean? You want your partner, your mom, whoever, to got you.
Mm-hmm.
I got you. If you can't in that moment, until you can get back to your resilient zone.
Yeah.
Right? We all have those moments.
Right.
In our resilient zone and able to do things.
And I'm also thinking, I mean, we're kind of going all over the place, but in terms of, you know, moms who have postpartum depression, how difficult that must be.
So, can you imagine? I mean, I'm sure you worked with them, I've worked with them. It's something that's not talked about enough.
Right.
I mean, but I'm not talking about it because it's not my...
Got it. But I'm just saying it's kind of one of those things where, you know, it's so difficult for the mom just to kind of take care of herself and then to think about attending to the need of a baby and their emotional needs, how overwhelming and hard that must be.
And then the dialogue that begins in their head, I'm horrible, I'm awful, you know, I can't take care of my baby.
Right. Well, I will do another podcast on postpartum depression.
Yes.
So we will have a whole one dedicated to that. But, you know, as I walked in, I noticed that you put you offered me a weighted blanket. So what does that do?
So you tell me what you felt with that.
I felt very grounded. I felt like I was, all of a sudden it kind of made me just focus on my body sitting on your couch. I'm not sure if I would sleep a whole night with a weighted blanket on me. Be a little too heavy,
you
but
you don't need it.
But yeah, I mean, and it reminds me when I do hospital work, patients have weighted blankets often on their beds because it's helpful.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just to help your nervous system land.
Mm-hmm. So right? Just another tool.
It's just another tool, but you started using the language that we use a lot with body work, nervous system, somatic work, is you felt very grounded, right? You felt in your body, you felt yourself on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have clients who can't even do that. So that's the first thing that we do. You know, let's resource you and let's ground you. Resourcing is when you help a client think of a person, place, time, something made up, whatever, a memory, that when they think about it, it just makes them feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we want to teach them that the body recognizes that they can sense into all their sensations, but through a good memory, through a good something, right? because they're the same exact sensations that get triggered when we get overwhelmed or revved up, right? It's just the meaning that we attach to them. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we, you know, we want to resource them so that if they get too overwhelmed in the room, we can bring them back to the resource. Oh, remember you told me when you walk on the beach and you felt the breeze and the ocean and you noticed that in your stomach and you had a smile on your face and you felt so happy. So that reminds them that those sensations in their body don't have to be scary or overwhelming. Hmm. We keep bringing them back. We keep bringing them back to the resource, right? Or like you said, or grounding. Just notice your body on the sofa. Notice the support of the sofa on your back. Notice your feet on the floor, mm-hmm. right? Just notice that, right? So that's just enough sometimes to slow someone down.
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking this makes a lot of sense for, say, a listener who has, you know, dealt with a lot of anxiety in their life.
Yes.
Kind of you understand that your mind is moving fast and you're thinking about all these different things and you're not necessarily grounded in the moment,
yes.
right? But what about for depression? How does that fit in?
Right, because you're talking about someone who's sort of, we say, in the low zone.
Yeah.
Right, who's so dampened down, right? So for me, that's someone who, yes, the weighted blanket, but for me, who some movement. Right. So my office is near the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So sometimes I will walk, right? With someone who's really, really in the low zone, we don't really want them sitting around more.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. You don't want to weight them down even more.
Sometimes, yes.
Okay.
To have them feel their body because they're so disconnected.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, yes, I probably would put a weighted blanket and have them just feel. And sometimes they're like, oh, hello, body, right?
Yeah.
But yes, totally, maybe the weighted blanket, grounding them. But sometimes I will walk with clients.
And what does that do?
I think it gets them in their body, right? It gets them moving. And a lot of times it's less intimidating. Like they say, when you're driving, you have kids, I have kids. When you're driving with them, you have great conversations, right? They say, because you don't have to look at each other. There's that, they don't have to gaze, you know, right. So sometimes it's less intimidating if we're just walking. Plus for me, it's also getting them into their body. Mm-hmm. Plus it also gives me an opportunity to see how they move. Are they a super duper fast walker? Probably not if they're feeling really low. But are they so out of their body that they're just walking and not even aware?
So what would that look like?
So I do this with clients, right? So going walking with someone tells me so much about someone, right? So let's say I have a fast walker, maybe not the really client who's presenting depressed, but let's say I have a...
That's more of the anxious
yes.
subtype, maybe.
Right. Or disconnected.
Oh.
Yes. Mm. Or disconnected, right? So if they're walking really, really fast, I'm going to be like, you know, we'll just walk for a little while and then I'll say, you know, let's slow down. Because what I'm doing is slowing down their nervous system.
Mm.
Right? Notice your feet when you walk. Notice as you put your foot to the ground and what you notice. Notice your surroundings. What do you see? Right? Super, super, like, anxious people or just anxious people sometimes walk so fast they don't notice see anything.
I can imagine.
Right. But the same with the really dampened down, possibly very depressed person. They also aren't seeing anything. Right. So we want to teach them to again get back into their body and notice, right? Because one of the things that we teach is orienting is where you look around the room. And that immediately brings you back your nervous system sort of online into self-regulation, right? Oh, name three things in the room or name three things as we're walking, right? That gets you back into your prefrontal cortex, your rational brain, if you're starting to feel disconnected or overwhelmed.
Right.
Right.
Huh. So, I mean, sorry to keep on going back to the infant stuff, but this idea that maybe someone who is walking really fast or walking really slow or not noticing their surroundings, maybe it's just this idea of you never really learned that from the very beginning,
absolutely.
Right? You never, it would, for some reason, that was not something that was inherent in terms of how you were raised or, you know, your attachment to people. And what maybe your job as a psychotherapist is to help them, to help train someone to notice that and say, you know, maybe you didn't learn how to soothe yourself from your primary caregiver, but now that you're an adult, there's ways that we could, there are tools that we can use to help you figure out how to soothe yourself.
Totally.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, you got it, right? Where you think of the kid who's trying to learn how to tie a shoe and they get so frustrated and so frustrated, and mom and dad are like, oh, it's okay, honey. Come on, give it another chance. You got it. Da, 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 da. I sort of feel like that's what we're doing with the retraining sometimes with adults.
Hmm.
It's okay. You're frustrated. It feels like a lot, but just slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
Slow it down. You got it. Take a moment. Look around. All right. Now you saw the three things in the room. Now try to tie your shoe again. Right? So it's that same. Yes, it's exactly that. It's maybe parts that they didn't get.
Right.
Growing up, can we go back? Because we know that we can retrain, rewire the nervous system.
Right.
Right? Because it's so biological.
Oh, interesting. So with the shoe example, what would maybe be a not very helpful response from a parent in that setting?
Right. I can't believe you can't do it. It's not hard. Oh, my God. Move, right? And what's happening to the kid in the meantime? They're crying, they're more upset. They weren't soothed. Someone just tied their shoe for them. They still didn't learn the skill.
Mm-hmm.
And their nervous system wasn't tended to.
Got it.
Right? And they weren't taught frustration tolerance.
Right.
Yeah. They were not taught frustration tolerance. It's okay. I know it's hard. I know it's frustrating when you can't do this. It's okay. Let's try again.
Right.
Try on your shoe. Try on mommy's shoe. Try on daddy's shoe. Right? Because it's our job as parents, hopefully, to help our kids, you know, or whoever the parent is, to help to tolerate frustration tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Because we see so much of that, right? I mean, especially now, today with the world.
Right.
And I'm sure you see it too. People coming in way more anxious or just irritable.
So is a lot of what you do in your practice parenting skills with individuals, or you do a lot of different things, but
I do a lot of different parenting of self, I guess.
Well, do parents ever come in to say, you know, I need to learn different ways of interacting with my child?
Yes, for sure. Yes, I do. Yeah, I work with adults individually. You know, I think in terms of the trauma work, that's a lot of what we're doing is the nervous system regulation, right? So you're teaching them to learn to manage all their feeling states. I think adults come in through the door for different reasons. I think parents come in through the door, like you're saying, it's not going well with my kid. Mm-hmm. I need to learn this differently. What can I do? And that's what gets them into the door. And then we can sort of look at all the different things that brings them in through the door.
Or maybe do most people bring their child through the door first and say, this is the behavior that's a problem. And clearly you're looking at the whole system, right?
Yes. And that is funny that you say that, because sometimes they think that by bringing their kid, they're just going to plop their kid, that the kid is the one, right? But I always tell people, I conceptualize things as a system,
mm-hmm.
right? Because as we've talked about in mental health, we can see that it's a system, right? A family is a system, and we all play off of each other and affect each other, right? So I always tell a parent who calls, great, you know, I'm happy to meet with your child, and da, 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 but I'm also going to need to meet with you and dad, you know, so that we can see what all the parts are and what's working, what might need some help, what might need some tweaking here and there, you know, because it is a system. And mm-hmm. what is happening with, well, we know, depending on the age of the child, if they're adolescent, I mean, they're just, their brain is already struggling and not online just because it's developmentally appropriate, right? But if you have a parent who, let's say, never really learned how to manage their feeling states and good self-regulation and has very low frustration tolerance, that's going to make those years extra hard, you know? So we go back and maybe look at what gets in the way. What can they do now? I love Dan Siegel's book, Parenting from the Inside Out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're
familiar.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Because he really has you look at what did we bring with us? What's getting in our way and what is not serving us well? What do we want to put aside and what do we want to bring forth? So a lot of times I'll take parents through that book and we'll do that. And it's because it's not just about parenting, right? It's right. about your life and how you came to be.
Right.
And now through the lens of a parent. So yeah. So to answer your question, that was very long-winded, but yes, we look at all those different things. If a child comes in or if a parent comes in, it come in under the pretext as I'm struggling as a parent. Right. But that's just one of their many parts.
Right. Well, I mean, just parenting, it just exposes so many of an individual's vulnerabilities. And there is no perfect parent.
I always say parenting is not for the weak.
Yeah.
It is a hard job. Even if you think you sort of have it together. Mm-hmm. Right. But if you had any maybe trials and tribulations, you know, that you really haven't had to deal with, parenting will bring all of that up.
And then the other variable is, I mean, I don't know if you ever talk about the fit between the fit of the temperament. I mean, mm-hmm. do you bring that up mm-hmm. with your clients? Because that's also that's kind of a wild card. It depends on the type of temperament that your child has.
Well, that's funny. That goes back to infant mental health, right? We used to talk to mom. I mean, we used to see that temperament mismatches. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not always, right? It's that thing. You think you're going to have a baby and it's going to be all simpatico and everything's going to be peachy keen. And then you get this kid, they're like, wow, we are like night and day. Mm-hmm. And that does happen, right? So then we do definitely work with, whether it's the adult in here seeing me alone or I have a family, that's fine. We can be different. How do you learn to understand that nervous system that is living with you in your house every day and right. it's not yours, right? Yeah. Understand what works for them does not work for you, right?
Right?
What works for you does not work for them. And how can the two of you have a basic understanding of that so that you're not constantly having an expectation that's going to leave you disappointed?
Right.
Right. Because that's the thing, right? If the parent, and we've all had it, we've all seen it where there's the expectation, just do it this way, or see it my way, or why do you respond that way, right?
Just, you don't understand as a parent, because right. it's not the way you do. But are there negatives to having the exact same temperament as your child, or is that, do you see any reason why that would be a problem, or maybe not?
I mean, but hopefully you have the other parent who's not, right, of the same.
Temperament. What would be the downside of having everyone in the family with the same temperament?
Well, I think it doesn't teach you flexibility, right? And that's what I always talk about with clients. You want to be able to have cognitive flexibility. You want to be able to be outside of yourself, not to understand outside of yourself. And that life doesn't always go the way that you see it in your head.
Right. So there's a benefit to having some diversity in temperament.
Absolutely. Mm. I mean, I think it's really, really important, you know, because that's going to be the world. Mm-hmm. The rest of the world is not going to be the same temperament as you. As we all know, you're going to come across, if you're a kid, those kids who are really hard for you or who are mean or who you don't understand, or if you're at work as an adult, you know, we've all had temperament mismatches, right?
Right.
And it's not a bad thing. I think it's what makes the world interesting. God, how boring otherwise, right?
Right.
How boring would it be if we were all the same? So, no, I think it's good for there to be difference because we want flexibility. I'm glad you sort of brought that up. We want all of us to have grit and resilience.
Right.
Right. We want that flexibility. It's when we're inflexible that we start to see all the problems.
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I feel like I learned a lot today. Thank you. I work with you as a therapist and right. we share clients, but I've never really sat down and talked right. about it. And, you know, it makes sense to me. And I think,
good.
I hope the listener also good. Kind of gets a little
it's
bit of understanding
lot,
of this.
I know. And I know when people say that either you work a certain way, they're like, oh, that's nice. I wonder what that means.
But to really understand what it is. And I'm sure for some people who are wondering about, you know, the type of therapy that they might need to understand what a somatic right. holistic approach could be and what it might look like, I think could be really helpful for people.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I forgot to mention, you know, your group, Healista is, you know, a thriving group in Santa Monica. And thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you for coming.
All right. Yeah. All right. Take care.